Syria readmitted to the Arab League after a 12-year absence. The decision is the most significant to date to be taken by Arab states to normalize relations with Damascus. In this same hall in 2011, the Arab League adopted a resolution to suspend Syria's membership, saying Bashar al-Assad's government had failed to stop its crackdown on protesters. Although little has changed in the Assad government's approach towards those opposed to his rule, those in favor of the step say it will have a major impact on the future of Syria and its neighbors. Improved stability in the country is expected to enable the return of those who fled its 12-year war. But critics say rehabilitating Assad sets a dangerous precedent for holding power to account in Syria and around the world. But the Arab League expects the region to benefit from its decision. Regional moves towards reconciliation started in the past 5 years. In 2018, the UAE and Bahrain reopened their embassies in Damascus. And since 2020, Turkish and Syrian intelligence officials have met several times. Recently, both countries' deputy foreign ministers met in Moscow following talks between defense ministers in 2022. Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan then met Assad nearly 3 weeks ago. Some in the Arab League argue better regional relations with Damascus could limit Iran and Russia's influence. Yet the announcement comes just days after the Iranian president visited Syria, and as relations between Tehran and Riyadh are also taking a new direction. Ali Hashim, Al Jazeera.
Earlier, I spoke to Louis Safi, a former opposition leader in Syria. Here's his reaction to the Syrian government's readmission to the Arab League.
I can say this is a sad day for anyone who cares about democracy, the rule of law, and human rights. This is rehabilitation, one of the most brutal regimes that we know of in current days. So, yeah, I think the many Syrians will not be happy. And this will not really bring more peace and stability to Syria. On the contrary, probably this will be very destabilizing.
But what we're hearing, and there are still a few details to get out of what was agreed at this Arab League meeting, is that this would only happen under certain conditions. Do you think the Arab League is capable today of enforcing those conditions on the Assad regime?
Clearly, the Arab League has no power to enforce anything in Syria. And I didn't really hear conditions, to be honest with you. I mean, the only condition I heard that many Arab foreign ministers were happy to preserve the Arab identity, but had nothing to say about preserving human rights, the right of Syrian people, and to maybe put some pressure on the regime to change their internal policies.
You say a sad day for the Syrian people, for the thousands, hundreds of thousands of victims of this conflict. Where does it leave the Syrian opposition? I know you're no longer leading the opposition, but what would you advise them to do now?
Well, I think the Syrian opposition today is not in a position to really do anything to change that dynamics other than standing by their principles. You know, the rights of the people should come first. And it saddens me that to see that many Arab leaders don't care about the life of the Arabs, that they seem to be interested to defend their identity, but their rights don't matter.
Well, let's speak to our senior political analyst about all this, Marwan Bashara, who's joining us via Skype from Paris. Marwan, as you heard the Syrian opposition, former Syrian opposition leader there say, this is a sad day for the Syrian people. He said they feel betrayed. What do you think, first of all, is driving this need to rehabilitate Bashar al-Assad?
It's mostly pragmatism. Some would call it opportunism. But I would say in statecraft, that certainly would be called pragmatism in the sense that I think Arab leaders have either sympathized with Assad for a long time, like, for example, the Egyptian president who took over by a coup d'etat back in 2013 and really has been more or less against the Syrian revolution. Others have already given up on the entire issue of a change in Syria back in 2016, 2017, like Saudi Arabia. Mm. So I think now the decision is basically the culmination of a long process of an admission, an admission that Assad will stay, or for those who supported the Arab Spring, an admission of defeat. Because basically the past dozen years, we've seen a full cycle, a full circle of the Arab Spring rising back in 2011 and basically eclipsing this week in 2023.
What about countries that supported this opposition and countries that had expressed reservations about readmitting Syria into the Arab League? I'm thinking here of Qatar, for example, countries like Morocco, which also had reservations. Where does this leave them and you know, their place in the Arab League? If this vote went ahead today with some countries absent, what does it say about the dynamics within the organization?
Well, I mean, the organization has always been split, right? I mean, the biggest split of all, of course, happened back during the invasion of Iraq, when the Arab League was basically split down the middle. It was also before that many years during the Camp David Accords and so on and so forth. So the idea that the Arab countries disagree is actually a healthy thing. It's not a bad thing. It's good for them to be united and for none of them basically to leave because of disagreement. So I think Kuwaiti, Qatari, Moroccan or other opposition to the return of Syria the way it has been done is a healthy thing. And I think it will maintain the pressure on other more enthusiastic members of the Arab League who want to deal with the regime, the bloody regime in Syria, by making sure that the process, the so-called step-by-step or the transitional process of dealing with the Assad regime is at its beginning, not at its end, in the sense that, yes, it would be admitted as of this week, but no, not everything's going to happen automatically, meaning the regime in Syria is going to have to carry a number of steps, take a number of measures based on a number of conditions, not necessarily preconditions, that will meet the desires of minimum civilizational normalcy, if you will, meaning not to murder, kill, repress, and so on and so forth, and certainly allow for the millions of refugees and displaced people to return to their homes. So I think this kind of division, this kind of pressure on the other members is healthy. Also, I think just to quickly to add that we all know that a lot of Arab countries want to get in into the Syria action because Iran is, of course, also expanding its influence in Syria 11 years after Tehran has supported the Assad regime. And I think many in the Arab world, notably among the neighbors like Jordan and others, who feel that Iran might actually establish a major base, expand its interest to no return within the country. So they are rushing to the Syria, right, the Arab countries, I mean, in order to balance that.
Briefly, Marwan, what about the West, the U.S., for example? Where are they left in all this? Because they also supported the Syrian opposition.
Yes, I think the United States has different calculus altogether. Some of the members like Saudi Arabia, Jordan and others, or Egypt, who are really live in proximity to Syria, and some of them like Turkey, also very pragmatic towards Syria, who have suffered from the question of refugees and so forth, and violence and terrorism and so on. A lot of these countries have immediate concerns and really want to get this thing done, and they want to see how, instead of fighting back, to basically fight forward when it comes to Syria. And I think after Saudi Arabia reached the deal of normalization with Iran, basically the nature of the conflict have changed from that of strategic tension to diplomatic tensions. So now they're basically competing diplomatically and I would guess economically over Syria. America has a different calculus altogether. America has not reached or reached a new nuclear deal with Iran, right, and hence the subject of Syria remains part of that Iranian-American calculus.
Thank you for that, Marwan Bashara, our senior political analyst, live there in Paris.